Hello, amazing parents and caretakers, and welcome to the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. I'm your family empowerment coach, Celia Kibler. I'm a mom of a blended family of five kids. I'm a grandma of nine kids, an author, a teacher, a speaker, and a consultant with over 40 years of training and real-life parenting experience. I'm here to offer you practical, doable tips, strategies, and techniques that will pump up your parenting skills and create peace, love, and laughter throughout your family. In addition, I'll be interviewing some great humans that are on a mission to make your life a better, happier, and healthier life. So let's not waste any time and get started with the next episode of the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. Thanks for listening. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. I have a wonderful guest with me today. Shahar Link is a master of those tests we have to take for college, you know, SATs, ACTs, all the initials. So he is here to help you and your child get into college through these exams. And we're going to talk about what you need to do, what your kids need to do, and what he can help you with so that they are successful. So let me tell you a little bit about Shahar Link. He is the founder of MindSpire Tutoring and Test Prep, and he's been teaching in high schools and tutoring standardized tests for over 25 years. Lots of experience to bring to you. So Shahar, thank you for being on the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast, and welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
If you would, getting started, would you share with our listeners how they can reach out to you in case they have to leave the podcast early, and also how you decided, other than you have 25 years experience, that you could be of help to families?
Sure. So thank you for the introduction. In order to find me, the easiest thing is to go to our website. It's mindspire.com, like mind and then spire, but it's all one word smushed together, mindspire.com. And fill out the contact form. It's on every page. And someone will get back to you same day or the next day at the latest. So how did I get into this? So many of our stories, I think, start with some kind of vulnerability that we detect in ourselves that we want to work on. So for me, I took this test, this SAT, when I was in high school, and I got really good grades in school. I thought I was a pretty smart guy, and it just didn't pan out the way I expected it to. I was like, why are my friends who I get better grades than them getting better scores than me? This doesn't make sense. And I just sort of carried that around with me for a while, this nagging, like there was something wrong with that. So after college, I went to college, I did well, everything was fine. I was looking for a little extra money, and I got a job with the Princeton Review, and which was, one of the only games in town at the time. And I started teaching the SAT to classes, and I loved it. And I think the reason I loved it was because I saw that I was helping them with something very real that I experienced myself, that these tests are important. They're here. They're not going away. And, these days, I believe that there's a real value to them. But at the same time, we don't want them to define us negatively. We want to put ourselves, we want students to get at the test in a way that is a positive experience, that teaches them something, that increases their confidence and self-esteem and their ability to be learners, not the other way around. And so I just always found that very rewarding. And here I am 25 years later, and I'm still doing it. And I still tutor, and we have a team of tutors and all of this. But I always have students because I like it, because there's something really important. It's like a rite of passage that I'm sort of guiding students through in some way. And that's a nice thing to do.
It's so awesome. And I shared with you earlier how my memory of my SAT was not a good one. I was never good at taking tests, especially standardized tests. And, I shared with you that I think I got my name right. And I know I got one question right. And I'm not sure about much else. And I just remember being so anxious and so nervous about this test. What is it about this test, and how do you help kids that are anxious about it?
Right. So it's a very different beast than most of the tests that students take in school. And so some students just slide right in. There's no problem. You know, they're this kind of thing just works for them, or they happen to have a perfect fit with what the SAT or the ACT wants them to know and what they actually know. But for many students, it's so different than what they're used to. So in math class, you study a particular thing, you know, quadratic equations for 6 weeks or 2 months, and then you have a test on it and tests along the way to make sure that everything is going okay. And that test is just on that, and you know what's going to be on it, and you study for it, and everything goes fine. Whereas the SAT, if you haven't studied for it, if you don't know what's going on with it, then it could look incredibly unfamiliar. And then the timing is more intense than a lot of tests that you're going to take in school. The, you know, on the math, you could have a geometry question, and then the next question is something from Algebra 2, and then your next question is something from that you did in seventh grade, and that was 5 years ago, and who even remembers anything about that? You know, it's a very different sort of thing, and it can just feel, once you start getting into it without knowing what to look for, it can throw you off. And so many students, if they don't know what's going on, they will not get a score that reflects what they're really capable of. Your daughter and, you know, the experience that you talked about, it definitely happens. And again, some students just kind of get it, and some need a lot more work. And then there's the anxiety piece, which even if they do all of the work and they prepare for it and they take a lot of practice tests and all of these things, the anxiety can be a real issue for some students. The best way to deal with the anxiety, there are two basic ways. First of all, you have to deal with anxiety overall in your life. I mean, if you're getting anxious about tests, there's probably other areas as well that where the anxiety is something that you have to work with and learn how to manage. And, you know, there's all the breathing things, and there's meditation, and there's cognitive behavioral therapy, and all of these things, which sometimes we suggest, you know, this is an area of your life that you'll want, that some students will really want to work with in a more intense way. But for most students, taking simulated proctored practice tests is the best thing they can do to deal with their anxiety. And I always think about this as a kind of exposure therapy, right? My sister once got really scared of driving on highways. So she started to work on it. And what do? They get on the exit and at a place on the highway where there are very few cars, and then she can go, you know, 30 miles an hour and just get off the next exit, you know, and you do that for a month, you know, until it's like, okay, I can be in the right lane going 30 miles an hour, you know, but the only way to do it is to actually do it, just do it safely. So, you know, we have live proctored tests every Saturday morning at 9:30, and kids take as many of them as they want. And you know, they have to take a certain amount in order to kind of meet the requirements of our program. And we encourage students who have more anxiety issues to do it more, even though it's the thing that they don't want to do, it's kind of the thing they have to do. And in many cases, you know, if you do that 10 times, and you take a simulated proctored test with other kids in the room or even online and the other kids in the Zoom room, by the 10th one, you're like, okay, this is not really as much of a big deal as I was making it out to be.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I've said it before on broadcasts and podcasts, and, you know, confidence comes from taking those steps more. You know, it's not the confidence at the beginning. It's the confidence that's grown by doing it again and again and again. And you're right. Some people just get it. And my daughter was one of those people. She's one of those people that are just good at language arts and science, not like, you know, either or. And I remember her taking an honors class in chemistry, and she would never like have to study. And I sat with her one day and I'm like, how do you just get A's in this? She goes, I don't know, Mom, I just get it. And I'm like, I didn't even take chemistry because too overwhelming.
Yeah.
But, and I think it's so true. And there's all these pressures put on children. And like that story about her friend, her parents put so much pressure on this child. Mm-hmm. And it was so living up to their expectations and how we feel like we're judged and we're not good enough and all of that. It's part of the reason I work so hard to teach parents how not to yell at their kids, because yelling at kids causes them to feel like they're never good enough. And that that goes into all of this.
Yeah.
So in a situation where now I believe colleges don't even, all of them don't even require these tests anymore, right?
Right. It's 80% are optional.
So what happened? So like I could see if it wasn't required for me, I would have been like, I don't.
Screw that. Yeah.
Exactly. But what is it good for kids to opt out of doing it since it's not required, or is it still good for you to go forth and take these tests?
It's a great question. It's the question that every student needs to ask themselves or talk about with their parents and their college counselors. The basic rule of thumb, and it can get a little more complicated than this, but the basic rule of thumb is you should definitely try it. You should at least take one of these tests once. And, you know, if you want to do it better, you take a practice simulated SAT and an ACT, you see which one you're better at off the bat without doing any studying, and you take that one, right? Because you have two options. Every university takes either test. You might as well try the one that you're probably just better at. And it's about 50-50, really. And you try it. And then you have your schools that you're interested in going to, and you see what their median SAT or ACT scores are. And if your score is at or above the median, then submitting the score will increase your chances of getting in at pretty much all of them, even the ones that are test optional. So if your score is at or above the median, you are doing yourself a favor by submitting the score. If your score is below the median, then you should probably not send it. However, even in some cases, it could make sense, especially if, you know, if you have a transcript that doesn't have as much data, you know, if you didn't go to a public school that has, you know, or if you went to a private school that doesn't do GPA in a normal way and stuff like this, then sometimes just for university admissions committees, it can be really helpful just to see another data point that has a number on it that they can compare to all of the other 10,000 applications that they're getting or whatever it is. So that's the rule of thumb. And if I would take it one step further and say that the advantage is considerable if you're above the median. So it's worth, if you take a test and you're like, I'm 100 points away from the median of the school that I would like to go to, that 100 points is probably worth studying for to achieve. Most students can go up 100 points or more. And, you know, the data is that if you submit a test score that's good, then you're about twice as likely to get in as someone who doesn't.
Wow.
So that doesn't mean that a lot of students aren't getting in without a test score. They are, right? That means it's about 2/3 are submitting and 1/3 aren't. So 1/3 of students being accepted to top universities without test scores is a big number. But 2/3 of those admits are submitting scores. So they're getting in at higher numbers.
That's good to know. What else for your company, what else do you offer students? Is it just focused on those tests, or is there something else you also help them develop for getting into you know,
colleges? Well, we don't do college counseling. We have people that we think are amazing who specifically focus on creating the college list that is appropriate for that student, helping them decide what types of schools they should be applying to, and then the essays, and then developing a resume that you have to send in now, or something that shows other things that you've done. You know, so that's like a whole other world. Many high schools have excellent college counseling, and that's great. But some high schools are huge, and the college counselors are overwhelmed, and you might want to work with someone privately or independently. Those people call us when they have a student that says, you know what, the student needs, we'd really like them to get a higher test score, and they give us a call. And so we do the testing. In terms of what we do to improve test scores, we do everything we can to improve test scores, and that can be a pretty holistic process. There is the anxiety piece that sometimes comes up. There's content things. So for some kids, it really is mostly about content. They need to learn grammar rules that just never got looked at. In many high schools, they don't touch grammar. Or they need COVID pandemic gaps, you know, Algebra 1 just sort of went out the window somewhere, and we have to really get into that. Whereas for other students, they know their stuff. They just need to learn the test, and they need to learn how to pace themselves and how to be strategic about working through problems. And in the math now, there's a new digital SAT that begins in March. The last administration of the paper-based SAT ever was this past weekend. So I just threw out a whole lot of papers. And so in March, you have the digital SAT. And on the digital SAT, you can use Desmos, which is an online graphing calculator that's really powerful. Students who know how to use Desmos well will have a huge leg up on the math section. And some students coming in, they've been using Desmos for 5 years, and some have never seen it before. So whatever needs to happen to get that score up is what we're going to do. If some of that is just cheerleading and accountability, and you're doing great, keep going, your score is going up, you can do this, you know, and there's some of that for kids who need it. So it's a holistic process.
Hi, parents. I'd like to take a break from this podcast to really tell you about my life's mission. I'd like to introduce you to the Day of Calm Foundation, a nonprofit 501c3 corporation where tranquility meets transformation. We believe in a world where unresolved anger and rage have no place, especially when it comes to the safety of our children. Our mission is clear: to bring an end to needless violence against the youngest members of our society through dedicated efforts with parents, schools, and community outreach. We strive to soothe the human core and foster a culture of calm. This Giving Tuesday and throughout the year, I invite you to join us in this vital cause. Your support will be the cornerstone of creating generations of calmer, happier adults. Together, we can build a future where every child grows up in an environment free from unnecessary aggression. Please visit our website, dayofcalm.org. Donate and be a part of this movement towards the Day of Calm. Mark your calendars for April 5th when we celebrate the International Day of Calm and bring together speakers from around the world that help build your calm in all areas of your life during our annual summit. I strongly believe, and I hope you do too, that a peaceful world begins with intention, personal responsibility, and a tranquil heart. Please join us by going to dayofcalm.org. Now back to our podcast. I think the whole idea of taking a sample SAT test or ACT test right off the bat, half the worry is you don't know what to expect. So immediately you're introduced to what the test is like, which in my eyes is a huge you know, step, a huge piece of the puzzle, because now you have an idea of what you're getting into. So
yeah, it just makes no sense to go in there taking the test completely cold. Again, because this is such a different test than what students are used to doing. On the ACT, there's a science section, which is 25% of the score. And students have never seen anything like that before. They're not asking about, you know, what is a mitochondria? They're not asking content things that you may or may not have learned in high school. You have to read a scientific text that you've never seen before with graphs and charts and a lot of complicated sounding words, and then answer questions about it. Most students just never practice that. It's not hard, but the difference between doing it cold, where you'll get one score, and then just trying it four or five times and working through it, your score is just going to pop up a whole bunch very quickly because, oh, that's all they wanted me to do. But it just doesn't feel like that the first time. So
it sounds like a no-brainer. It's like, why wouldn't you do this?
Yes, yes. And it's worth a couple of hours at least to take that practice test. And in my opinion, if you want to get into a more competitive college, it's worth an investment to do it. I mean, you know, one way to think about this is that what do you have that much control over in 3 to 4 months at the end of your junior year? Your GPA is pretty much baked in, right? It's been built up for 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade. You could move the numbers, the needle a little bit by getting a couple more A's, but maybe you move it from a 3.7 to a 3.8. Not much more. It's a lot of it's already there. Your service work and your volunteering and your leadership and your extracurriculars, that's already been happening. You know, you're not going to reinvent yourself as a leader of your community in the last 3 months before your junior year ends. But you can increase your SAT score 200 points in the last 3 months before your junior year. You really can do that. And that's a game changer. That opens up a million new doors for colleges. So that's why, you know, that's why there's value here, because it's one of the last levers you can pull and really, really significantly impact your admissions experience.
That makes so much sense. So what can a child expect? Their parents enroll them in one of your programs. What do you take them through?
So if we do private tutoring, it is a very, very custom process. You know, they're going to take a baseline SAT and an ACT first, if they haven't done something like that already. Sometimes we use the PSAT, which many students just took in October. But we'll get baseline scores, we'll compare the tests, and we'll say, okay, you should study for the ACT or you should study for the SAT, and we'll help them make that decision. And then they will start to take practice tests, and the bulk of the homework is taking previously released tests. For the digital SAT, we don't really have that, but we do have very, very good approximations of what it's going to look like. And they take those tests, and then we see, okay, you missed this, and we go through everything that they miss on every test. And based on that, we assign specific targeted work. Okay, you need to learn more. Your trigonometry is rusty, or you know, whatever the case may be, and we target those topics or subjects in a very specific way, so that they, you know, if you do, there's a data point that I like, that if you see a type of problem and make a mistake 6 times. On average, the 7th time, you won't make that mistake anymore. But it takes most people 6 times of getting it wrong before they get it right. And we punish ourselves a little too much thinking that, oh, I made this mistake once before, I should get it right the 2nd time. But that's almost never how it works. It's just our brains don't work like that. We need repeated viewings and repeated mistakes before finally it sinks in. That's just how it is. So, you know, we want to have them take these practice tests and make these mistakes. And we also want them to do that in a targeted, specific way and make them more so that by the seventh, so that we hit that seventh time pretty quickly and they don't make the mistake. So that's kind of what's going on. And it's a very unique process for every student. We also have a group class that we've introduced with the help of technology and adaptive software, especially for math, that very quickly reads what a student is getting right and getting wrong, and then feeds them on the screen essentially the types of problems that they need to work on to improve their score the most. Now we can have using that kind of software, we can have a group class where students are doing a lot of work on their own, but the teacher can very quickly see, okay, here's what's going well, here's what's not, here's what you need to do. And we can have effective score increases. Group classes have been tough for us because so much of the effectiveness comes from making sure that they're doing the right work at home. But now we've technology is getting a lot better with that. So those are that's the basic overview there.
Well, it just sounds like such a great opportunity. You know, I think back when I took the SATs and I said, I probably did terrible because I'm sure I did, but that was like back in, you know, not to date myself, but 74, I think it was 74. Mm-hmm. So had to be, because I graduated high school in 75. So I don't think we had things like that.
Oh, no, that didn't exist.
And now you do. You know, I don't even think we had a PSAT. Maybe we did. I don't remember. I don't remember taking that test twice. I feel like I would have remembered it as much as I remember the SAT. I do remember my brother taking it because he aced it. I mean, he got like 100% and was like early admittance to colleges and things. But you have this now. And parents take advantage of it. I mean, this literally seems like a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you do something like this to help your child's future? You know, we invest in so many things. Why wouldn't you invest in this? And, you know, on the point of your child being fearful of tests and all that, like, I think back with the knowledge I have as a coach and a therapist, I think back and I know why I felt that way. So if you're feeling like your child's like that, then you may want to have me work with me. And for the test, then you need to work with Shahar. Because this just, it does not make logical sense to not prepare your child for this exam. Practice makes better. Give them the opportunity.
And another analogy that I like to use is everyone in so many walks of life, we see the value of coaching, right? And you know, Steve Jobs had a coach. I was reading this guy, I forgot his name now, but there's a book, The Trillion Dollar Coach. This guy coached Steve Jobs and he coached Bill Gates and he coached, you know, all of these tech guys. And they would talk to him once a week and they would ask for advice. You know, how do I manage this situation? How do I manage that situation? If Steve Jobs got a coach, you know, this guy who's like a genius, why shouldn't we all have a coach for the things that are important in our lives?
Exactly.
You know, athletes, right? So the best athletes in the world have coaches. It's not like they have it all figured out. So why should we expect a 16-year-old student who's growing up, you know, who has a lot on their plate, to just be able to figure out this 3-hour massive test on everything they've ever supposed to have learned? It's not a reasonable expectation.
And they don't even have a fully developed brain until they're 25. So why wouldn't you?
Right. And that's another thing, which is, you know, trying to go it alone. So I would say about 10% of teenagers in my experience can go to the bookstore, go online, get a book or get a software thing, Khan Academy, and do it themselves and actually improve their score. It's a small number of students. Some just get it. These these kids who have super executive functioning skills by the time they're 16. But let's face it, 90% or more of teenagers just aren't there yet. They'll get there, but their brains aren't ready for that yet.
Right.
And so the accountability piece and setting up the structure, and furthermore, there's so much research on how the social environment is so crucial for the way teens especially learn. By the time we're adults, we don't necessarily need to be part of a social group to learn something. I can pick up Duolingo and learn Spanish pretty well all by myself for 20 minutes a night. Most teenagers can't do that. They right. need other people, either kids, teachers, other human beings to be interacting with for this to be something that they continue and stick with. And so the tutor or the class acts as that social glue, in a sense, that makes the learning possible and consistent for most teenagers. So it's just a different game.
And just so much great information, Shahar. I really appreciate it. And again, this is Shahar Link. His website is mindspire.com, MINDSPIRE, all one word, .com. And Shahar, there's just been so much information in this short half hour. Do you have one more piece of advice before we say goodbye to our listeners that you can offer a parent who's really questioning, or they're you know, frustrated with their teen and they just don't know what to do about all this?
Sure. Two things. First of all, you want to be in the middle of, you don't want to be under concerned about this and pay no attention to it whatsoever, because that's not really serving your teen. They look to us for guidance, some more than others, you know, your kid, but it's something that you want to bring up, but you also don't want to be overly concerned with this. There's all the helicopter stuff. Your students will do fine, you know, if they are in a supportive, loving, structured environment with appropriate boundaries and limits, etc. They're going to be okay. And I have to reassure a lot of parents who call us sometimes sort of freaking out about a low score or whatever, and say, we'll get the score up. It's going to be okay. It's okay if they don't go to Harvard. The doors don't close really until the very end. So there's a lot of opportunities for doors to open. And so, you know, I think as a parent, the moderation in all things, not too little, not too much, is kind of what you're looking for here. I guess that's just what I want to close with.
And I think that's a great point. And, you know, realize too, if your child is a little more immature or they don't even seem ready, everybody has community colleges, which mm-hmm. are great places to start. You can do that for 2 years and then transfer into a four-year college. I mean, there's so much opportunity instead of just making all of this a stress fest for all of you, because that is not helping anything. Yeah, stress is the most detrimental.
Right. Right. You don't want zero stress. You don't want too much stress. A little bit of stress means you care. That's good.
Right. Exactly.
But too much stress, and then you can't actually do what you need to do. I took off 2 years between high school and college. I worked. I did a little study abroad thing, but I worked in construction. You know, those were incredibly valuable years, and it's because I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready yet. And right. then I went to college when I was 19. And I just crushed it, because by the time I got there, I was like, I don't want to work anymore. I'm ready for this. So everyone has their own path, and we need to sort of respect that.
Exactly. So great, Shahar. It's been so great talking to you, and really so much information in a short time that I think will put a lot of parents' minds to ease. And even, a lot of students if, you know, if they allow their kids to also listen to this podcast. And by all means, if you know somebody that's in the brunt of this time of your life, share this out with them and give them a little help, because, you know, I don't have any college students right now. I have grandchildren who are almost at that age, but, you know, I've already been there and done that. And I know how much help it can be to hear answers to the questions that we all have, that we all think about, and stop micromanaging, stop worrying about every little thing, and get the information you need. And Shahar Link, as far as I'm concerned, here's the man to get it from. So go to mindspire.com and find out more. I'm sure he's happy to help you and answer any questions that you have.
Absolutely. We very typically have, you know, at least an hour conversation before things get rolling, because there's a lot to know and a lot to learn.
There is. Well, thank you, Shahar, so much for being here. I'm really grateful.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
And guys, you can get the links in the show notes. And once again, if you enjoyed this, please comment, leave us a little comment about how much you enjoyed it, share it out, show the love. And as always, guys, I'm very grateful that you took time out of your busy schedule to hang out with us. And I wish you days, even college days, filled with peace, love, and tons of laughter. Don't forget to laugh. Really is the best medicine. You know how I feel about that. And I'll see you here next time on the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. If you're really ready to start creating cooperation in your home, more listening, more joy, less stress, less yelling, less negotiating, a whole lot less aggravation, then reach out to me and let's put a parenting system in place that works for you and your kids. Private and group coaching is available, and in 6 months or less, you will start seeing a much happier home that your children will blossom from instead of have to recover from. Get the manual that I wrote for your parenting journey, Raising Happy Toddlers, How to Build Great Parenting Skills, and Stop Yelling at Your Kids, along with my three children's books, All About Me, I Am Grateful, and Being Different is Fun. Find it all at pumpedupparenting.com.